very particular opinions about it.
Okay. Go ahead. Hello, my name is Jennifer Mesidore from the Vocalist magazine, and today we have with us Mr. Charles Husbands, and we want to thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
I'm just going to leave it to you to present yourself and tell us more about you, and yeah, go ahead.
My name is Charles Husbands. I'm a multi-award winning platinum songwriter. I've been in the music game for just over 40 years. Started off as an artist for many years on my journey, and then later transitioned to an executive, which I've been doing probably for the last 6 or 7 years. So it just basically starts with me and my love of music. I've always been in love with music since I can remember opening my eyes from very, very, very young. So everything for me musically starts there. I would say I probably started taking music seriously around the age of 13. And it started off as me being a rapper with some friends of mine in school. And I realized from a very early age that this was something, an industry that I wanted to be involved in. It was something that I wanted to be part of, even though I was lacking a lot of information at that time. I was just kind of going on gut instinct and love and passion for it. So it starts with me and my friends rapping in high school. After high school, I kind of leave the friends behind that I was rapping with and kind of move forward on a more independent career. So I went from group mode to being a solo artist, basically, which I spent many years in doing that and pursuing greatness in there. I moved to Montreal in 83. I think it's about a decade here before I decide that I want to start traveling and start getting some different musical experiences in some different places. Now, I love Montreal. I always come back here no matter where I go. But I was able to branch out and go to Toronto for a little bit and see what the music scene was like there. Ottawa, Vancouver for a little bit, Halifax, just different areas that have a different scene, but everybody's still trying to compete and be successful. So that enabled me to make some new connections when I was traveling. But I realized the golden rule when I was out on the road that, you know, if you're not from that city, it's going to be a lot more difficult to get support from that city, as much as they may like you, as much as they may be feeling what it is you're doing.
And we're speaking of Montreal.
No, I'm talking when I'm outside of town. In Montreal, that's not a problem. But when I was living outside of Montreal and I was trying to do certain things musically, I just found it was a little bit more difficult because they knew I wasn't local. And they're often more willing to promote and push their own than they are an outsider. Even if they respect the outsider's capacity, they just want to see their own people kind of elevate.
Okay, that's something new. You said you moved around a little bit.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about your childhood, where you grew up to, your background?
Yes. So I come from Halifax, Nova Scotia. I lived there for 13 years. And I lived in a community where there wasn't really much urban music. So I didn't really get to experience a lot of that from where I grew up. But I was always in the United States every summer from the age of 10. So from 10 to 13, every summer, I was in New Jersey, which is very close to New York, which enabled me to really get a closer look at the music scene than I was getting in Montreal. Because in those days, there was no internet. So the information traveled very slowly. Even music, sometimes it took 6 months for a song to reach from New York to up here. Without the internet, it was much slower.
And it was CDs and all that back then.
Yeah. CD. Well, it actually started off for me in the 80s with vinyl, with records. Literally, the 8-track era was just before me. So no, you may not even know what an 8-track is. That's what they used to slip them into. You could have them in your car and stuff. And you could play albums and stuff like that on 8-track. That was my father's era. My era came, and then it became cassettes. And then it eventually moved from cassettes to CD, yes, to digital. And when CD came out, it was like, whoo, this is the biggest thing since sliced bread, because it made it a little bit more easier. And cassettes, you know, the ribbon could always rip and the tape could damage easily. So coming up back in those days, in the earlier days, these are the things that we had to kind of rely on when we were trying to record and do stuff. And we were recording in analog, not digital, which is a totally different world.
Okay. And so from that, how did you start into the music industry? What sparked you to get into the industry?
Honestly, what I saw in America during those couple of years when I was visiting in the summer, because the urban music industry hadn't fully blossomed yet in Canada. So this is the early 80s. Rap is a new thing here. It hasn't fully blossomed nowhere near to the level that it is today. So a lot of my early interest came from America just because I was there.
Okay. So a lot of your inspiration is American, much more than Canadian.
Yes, early rappers in America. So guys like Curtis Blow, Grandmaster Flash, Grandmaster Melly Mel, yes. Like the pioneers. Yes, of the rap game, the OGs, the ones that started off. Most of them came out of the Bronx in New York. And those were the guys that inspired me. I saw them and it was like, oh my goodness, this is my calling. I have to do this.
Awesome. And how did you make it into the Canadian industry scene? Because it's not easy, as you said.
No, it's not. Luckily for me, I had this little thing in my head that kept telling me, I'm the best. And whether that was true or not.
Positive affirmation.
And yeah. It was a driving force for me. It kept me wanting to do more at a time where things were difficult, like you said. There was no internet. The multimedia didn't really exist. Just the way the whole game operated was different in terms of record sales, how you got paid, the whole nine yards. It was a different industry. So for me back then, really it was about tenacity and really just that willingness to press forward, because I knew there was a void, meaning I knew there was still uncharted territory. I hadn't fully seen the map yet, but I knew it was inevitable. The map was coming. So I just kind of fought through it and gave it my all, and that kind of kept me in the running long enough to survive to be part of the industry. Because
what was that void? What was missing, and how did you?
Very interesting question, and a very important question. So, in those days, the city of Montreal, studio wise, we'll start there, it was geared for rock music. We had successful rock artists in the 70s and 80s that came from Montreal that generated a lot of money. So going into the 90s, the studios are still set up for rock projects. They still have engineers in them that are used to mixing rock music. So right there, that's a problem. Because I'm going in literally to some of the biggest studios, Piccolo and Vincent and some of these big studios where people like Celine Dion record. And as much as the studios were state of the art, the void was that the people that worked in those studios didn't really know much about hip hop music. And that caused for the products that were created there to be lacking, because they just didn't fully understand what a producer in New York would do when they were mixing a hip-hop album, a producer in LA would do, or in Atlanta would do at that time. And without that knowledge, without that feel for it, it caused for a lot of the music not to be really created the way that it should have been.
Okay, and from that, did you get a lot of help to start?
No, because again, where there is very little industry, there's going to be very little help. So, for example, when you go into a city and you know they have multiple urban radio stations, okay, I don't care what language, okay, multiple urban radio stations, I don't care if it's French urban, English urban, Spanish urban, it's still urban music. So when you have radio stations that are built and based around urban music, the urban industry follows that. If you don't have that, it's very difficult to operate, because if you're trying to push an artist out of Montreal, well, the easiest way to get that artist to the mass public is through the radio. And if the radio does not embrace or accept urban music or urban music that's being made locally, it's going to be very, very difficult to get the exposure and reach the masses that you want to reach and are trying to reach here.
Mm. Okay, I understand. And from that, you became Chalk Eyes, as we know.
Yes, yes.
How did you get the name to...
I would say it starts with it being the Ice era. As funny as that sounds, there were some other rappers that were using the Ice. And the thing is that I just felt like I matched them, because the rappers that were using it were very aggressive. Some of them were battle rappers. And I just felt that the Ice persona fit me because of that. And from there went on to name myself Chuck Ice, which of all the names that I've used in my career is the one that's the most famous. That's the one that I had the most fans behind, the most support. And at the end of the day, the name Chuck Ice really just comes from ice is a hard word. And, you know, when you feel of ice or think of ice in the diamond form, it's an unbreakable, you know, piece of glass, or it's an unbreakable substance. So ice just seemed like the right way to go with being the type of rapper I was.
And I guess it's pretty important for an artist to have a good name and to choose a good name.
One that represents their characteristics well.
Their characteristics.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Awesome. And from your name to Montreal and Toronto, we want to focus on the Montreal scene. How is it? How hard was it back then, and how is it still today for an artist to?
Interesting question again. So, most of the artists that I know that started back then, they're not around today, because 90
and the hip hop industry.
Yes, 97-98% of the artists that were trying to make a career of it back then, 98% of them chose to do something else. Some may be in music, others outside of music. Today, it's a bit easier for a Montrealer. As much as we still face some of the obstacles with radio, we don't have some of the things that Toronto has in those areas. Like Toronto has 5 or 6 urban music radio stations that are on the air all day. Gives them a certain advantage. But we do have a tremendous amount of talent in this city. We've always had it. That's one thing I'll say about Montreal. There's never been a shortage of talent here. So that part, you know, has never changed. Artists today now that are trying to make it, they're not facing as many obstacles as they were in the past, but there's still some obstacles. Like I say, the radio, the language barrier at times, because if you're dealing with urban music, it's predominantly English because it comes out of America. So there's case scenarios where basically language can play a barrier in terms of how far a person can go in terms of what their capacity is and who they can reach. So a French rapper is going to be able to reach the French speaking parts of the world. An English rapper is going to be able to reach the English sections of the world. There's a difference in the money in those two different regions. And so it would also bring me back to, it depends on your language, because I know some French rappers here in Quebec that are doing extremely well. Enema, Soulja, like guys like these guys, they do very good numbers in Quebec. So again, it depends on what language we're talking about. And, you know, they face different things. The French rappers will face certain obstacles because they don't have certain things that they have in the English market. And the English rappers will face certain obstacles because they don't have certain things available that they have in the French market.
Well, that's what I want to point out. How do you deal with the language barriers? And how does an artist can overcome those challenges? Because, you know, you have to eat. If you speak French, you have to look at your French fans.
That's right.
Or English, etc. How do you overcome that? Because you want to be able to not only touch the French part, but also the English part. How can you, an artist, upcoming artist today, try to get into both scenes or try to get into the most popular scene?
The interesting thing about that question is that regardless if it's French music, English music, Spanish music, doesn't matter. The music industry fundamentally operates by the same rules of engagement, regardless of what language that you're speaking in. Now, another thing is that every city that's out there, let's say in North America, that has a music scene, they all face obstacles. They all face obstacles. They all have pros and cons that they have to overcome to move forward. You know, we often look to America and think that it has all the answers. Well, it doesn't. There are a lot of small towns in America. Yes, there's a lot of metropolitans, and we've seen what some of those metropolitans can do, but there are more people in smaller towns than there are metropolitans, which means that there is just as many people that are in situations where they're working against obstacles, basically. So for all people, regardless if it's French, English, which city it is, it's really about understanding the music industry, first and foremost, how it works, what the algorithms are, what's expected of you, what makes sense most of the time. And then the second thing would be to identify with the region. Location, location, location. Every place has what I call hallmark trademarks, which means the city is known for something. It's famous for something. In Montreal, we are famous for poutines and the Montreal Canadiens and, you know, beautiful women and these type of things. Montreal is known all over the world for these type of things. As an artist, you have to use what's available at your disposal, because at the end of the day, it's never going to be perfect. But you have to use what your city provides as a strength until you can get, I don't want to say somewhere else, but it's like Hollywood. If you want to be an actor, you normally go to Hollywood and then you come back to your city and they all love you once you go to Hollywood, right? So it's no different. This is it's a stepping stone in some cases, because there are air artists that want to have bigger careers per se than what Montreal offers. But at the end of the day, to start having a career out of Montreal, you have to use what's available. You have to network. And most importantly, you have to understand how the music industry operates regardless of language, because there are some fundamental things that are the same. Once you have a better understanding of those things, you'll be able to operate better in any city or any language.
What would you say to those artists about the music industry right now? How hard is it to get into it?
It's oversaturated, that's for sure. So Spotify alone releases over 60,000 songs a day. Out of those 60,000 songs, 60% of that is urban content. So we're looking at about 35,000 songs that come out every day, basically, which means that that's your competition. That's what you're up against. So at the end of the day, everybody's fighting to try to get their music positioned, which makes it more difficult. There's a lot more artists now because of the internet. The reach of the internet allows artists to just work wherever. It just makes life that much more easier. So today, the internet is definitely an advantage because you can work outside your city. The whole concept of networking and connecting with people is huge. You have to get out there. You cannot sit in your basement, you know, just working on making music all day. You have got to get out and meet people, make connections, and expand the Rolodex all the time. That's huge. And to have a realistic understanding of what's expected of you. You know, that's huge because there's a lot of people that are out there just making that understanding up as they go based on things that they've seen, but it doesn't make it right. They might be getting part of it right, but there's part of it that's still being not 100% dealt with properly. So for an artist today with the vast amount of competition that's out there, you know, everybody's trying to do it. That part makes it more difficult, but there are a lot more jobs in the industry now. So, you know, you may reach a point where you realize that maybe the rapper, singer is not cut out for you, but maybe you could be a manager, a publicist, promoter, producer, beat maker. Maybe there's another position for you in the music industry that's more suited for you once you've had the opportunity to you know, to play it out and really see. You have to be open to these options because if you're not, you'll find yourself working in a factory or working, doing something that you're not happy with. Sometimes just being able to work in the industry, maybe you're not the artist that you wanted to be, but just being able to have employment, to have a job, to be around the industry that you love so much, that can sometimes be a win too. Because at the end of the day, this is like the Olympics. And there's people that are willing to, I don't want to say die for it because it's not really the word I'm looking for, but yeah, put everything on the line. Put everything on the line, meaning work 20 hours a day if that's what it requires. Show up everywhere they're supposed to show up. Just be disciplined about everything that it is that they deal with. You have people out there that are like that. That's the competition. So the most... Or the most important statement, or yeah, the most important thing I would say about the question that you asked is you have to be prepared to work. You have to be prepared to work because there's a lot of people out there that whether they have talent or don't have talent, that's whatever. Their work ethic is high.
Awesome. And competition can be... It's important, but yes, it can also be stressful. What encouragement words do you have for those?
Remember, it's a process. Because if you allow yourself to become discouraged or stressed out because of the competition, which is there, clearly, you may never have the opportunity to grow. A brand, even when established, it grows over time. And sometimes... audibles will be called just based out of things that we're seeing with the brand. So you have to have a certain level of patience that will allow the brand to grow. But at the same time, you have to be following the right procedures because music is the only thing, and I tell people this all the time, it's the only career choice that I know of out there. I'm waiting for somebody to tell me another one where you can do it for 20 years and still not be doing it right because you never received the right information. You never received the right procedures, and that would have increased the chances for the win dramatically. Yes, the music is a factor, but there's a whole bunch of other things that is an engine that push the music.
And we are talking about management and making sure you have the right team and a mentor.
Yes. So the team is important. And my advice on the team is don't bite off more than you can chew right out the gate. Because as you grow, you'll notice naturally, okay, I need to add somebody to the team now because we've gotten to a size now that it makes sense. If you put people on the team before you have grown to the size that you actually need them, it could become a problem, especially if those people have expectancies. Now, if they're people that are friends or family that just want to ride with you for, you know, because they just want to do it, that's different. But if that's being done in a business capacity, you have to make the right decision in terms of what's the right timing for these things. So management now, for example, unless it's offering key guidance. So there are managers out there that know a lot about the music industry that when they have an artist signed underneath them, they're going to offer that guidance to the artist. But then there are other managers that are just there to conduct business for that artist. Now, if an artist is not properly ready with their artistry at that point in time, it makes no sense to really go forward with management or any of those things at that point because it's still being built up. The full worth of what's to come is not there yet. Management becomes a necessity when basically your phone's starting to ring now a little bit because you've created a little bit of buzz. Your numbers are starting to pick up, you know, online and in other areas. That would give a reason. And most importantly, you're starting to see a little bit of money come in because without that, a manager is probably not going to even be interested unless it's friends or family. Managers like to know that there's revenue streams already at work or at least a good potential of one being there.
And as a songwriter, how can you relate to that from the start of your career to now? How was it important for you about the competition management and all that? How did you go through?
As a songwriter, I went through less heartaches in that area. And the reason being is, I don't know if it's because there's less of us or it's because...
In Montreal.
Yeah, in Montreal, but in general, artists are a dime a dozen. You know, like you can find artists like anywhere. And the thing with artists is that a lot of them claim to be songwriters, but they're not all qualified songwriters. You know, some of these artists actually need professional songwriters to help them advance their product. But with songwriters, you develop a reputation for the sound that you excel in. So normally what would happen is that you would be sought out by people that are looking for that particular type of sound, which makes it a little bit easier because you're not fighting against the whole music industry. As an artist, you're fighting against the whole music industry. You're fighting against every artist that exists in that genre. In songwriting, if it's, let's say, Beyoncé they're looking for a song for, they're going to look for somebody that has that, or that is a pop R&B specialist, somebody that has gotten on the charts with other music that they've written before, but also knows how to maintain an R&B feel. So songwriting, there's less of them, which makes it a little bit easier, but songwriters have a little bit more difficulty getting in touch with the people that they need to in order to get their music across. Because I hear people say all the time, oh, this song would be great for JC or Jay-Z, or this song would be great for Lil Wayne, or this song would be great for Jacquees. But how do you get it on their desks now? How do you get the song from that stage to the point where somebody close to them or them will listen to it, give it a chance, give it a shot? And that's what I would call the gray area, because like all of these industries, it's kind of like about who you know. So you're always looking to increase your connections, because it's not often that you're going to just send a song in somewhere to a music library and somebody pick it up from there. It's possible. But if you have connections that are constantly putting out music, that's where you want to be as a songwriter. You want to be around that.
How do you meet those people? How do you build those connections?
By proving yourself and, most importantly, being humble. In this industry, requires a mass amount of humility and patience. And they start weeding people out right away that don't show those characteristics. Right away. So even if you're a brilliant songwriter, if you're in too much of a rush to get certain things done, if you're impatient, if you're not following what we would call the industry procedures, you're going to annoy people. People are not going to want to work with you. And more importantly, they're not going to want to validate you you won't be able to use them as a reference or anything like that because you're not working within the prototype design of how they see things operate. This is where humility comes in. Because through humbling yourself, people will often give you opportunities through humility. But if you're showing up, oh, I'm the best thing in the world and my music is the greatest and the songs I write, nobody can... If you show up with that kind of mentality and you don't have a track record, because people with the track records don't even do that. So if you show up without a track record, even if you're great, they may overlook you. They may overlook you because like we were saying, it takes a certain amount of humility, especially in the songwriting department, because there's a lot less doors or roads that lead there.
Yeah. So from that, your experience, is there anybody who influenced you to get into the industry? Is there anybody you looked up to?
Absolutely. I would have to say when I was an artist, LL Cool J was a huge influence on me. Run DMC was a huge influence. I wanted to be Run for the first 3 to 5 years of my music career. There's so many. Big Daddy Kane, back in the day, Slick Rick, Fat Boys. They all had a huge influence because they were respected by so many people that I respected. And they were just so talented. And as time went on, you know, people like Mary J. Blige, you know, the queen of R&B who just never stops delivering top-notch music. Jodeci, you know, was an early influence for me.
The classics.
The classics, absolutely. And a lot of the classics influenced me. But those artists that I just mentioned, they had a personal place in my heart. Ice Cube, another one. You know, he had a personal place because as a rapper, being a lyricist when I was a rapper was always one of my strong points. So I could always appreciate other artists that had strong lyricism and delivery. Oh, and I'm leaving out Rakim, who's probably like my favorite of all time. Those people, they really impact me. They guided me. They taught me everything that I needed to know about persona in music. Like what you need to do to carry yourself off the mic. Because, yeah, we know kind of what it's like when you're on the mic, what you need to do when you're performing. But what about when you're off the mic? What type of person am I supposed to be when I'm dealing with people off the mic as a rapper? So I learned from watching these guys and certain experiences that I saw them in, you know, how they maintained their composure and their discipline through things. And
so it became a character kind of.
Yes, okay. Yes. Now, the thing is, because I come from a bit of a acting background before music, that kind of helped. And I would say to any artist out there, don't be afraid to take some acting classes and stuff like that. Because when you're on stage, you know, that ability to just be able to make stuff up out of thin air, you know, and improv, as they call it, it's huge. And in my early days, it's what separated me from a lot of the other artists was the improv. Yes, my music was a factor, but how I was able to control the crowd just through talking to them, voice projection, because I was used to doing plays in front of 500 people with no microphones. The person in the back of the audience still had to be able to hear me, basically. So voice projection, enunciation, pronunciation, all of these things come from the acting world. which can be a great asset as well.
Nice, awesome. So my last question would be, how would you like to be remembered? Because you went from the 90s and now it's 2022. It's a long career. How would you like to be remembered? And what would you like to leave
You're
for
the first
the youngsters?
Person, the first person to ever ask me that question. And I've been asked a lot of questions. But it's funny because I know the answer right away. The answer is, I want to be remembered for the love that I had for the industry, for the time I put in, for the patience that I had over the years, basically, and especially when things weren't going well. Because I know all artists have moments and times in their career where things just aren't going well. You know, so I want to be remembered as a person that was passionate during the good times, the bad times, a person that loved music unconditionally, no matter what happened, and somebody that was always willing to get up the next day and go at it again. That's how I'd like to be remembered.
Awesome. Well, I hope everything turns out well for you.
Thank you very much.
And keep going. Don't give up. We love you very much.
I appreciate it.
And thank you for stopping by our studio today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I hope that went well.
Yes, thank you. Thank
excellent,
you.
Excellent. I love this kind of stuff, so I'll keep going till you tell me the camera's off. So I guess we're on break for a little bit now. Okay, perfect. Oh my God. Oh, not necessarily with freestyling, but with your freestyle talking abilities. So you know, like when you're in between songs, and or you're just starting your show off, any time that you have to speak to the audience, not only was what I was doing leagues above everybody else, but my pronunciation, the way that I sounded on the microphone, the way that they were able to hear me with absolute clarity, every word, that comes from acting. Oh no, there's crazy audience interaction. Now here's the thing, not everybody